Hello, kids. This is Ryan from the Dead Radio Podcast. Please excuse me while I get these plugs out of the way. Please subscribe to the Dead Radio Podcast on iTunes, BeyondPod, or whatever your mobile podcast app preference may be to download and listen to the show on the go. Not sure how to do that? Go to our YouTube page by searching Dead Radio Podcast and watching the lovely video Adam posted to teach you dummies how to figure it out. You might as well subscribe to the channel as well while you're there. We're also on Instagram at Dead Radio Podcast and on Facebook as well. Facebook.com/Dead Radio Podcast. If you'd like to support the show, send us a few shekels at our Patreon page, patreon.com/Dead Radio Podcast. Your support will help to
enhance
the show and fund future Dead Radio projects like Tim Cop, a live chili cook-off, and a shot-for-shot remake of Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley. We do this show for fun, but as Danny DeVito and Twins once said,
well, money talks and bullshit walks.
We also share the internets with other local podcasts. So check out Dark Side Records Podcast, Dork Side at Dark Side Podcast, Hudson Valley Legends Podcast, and Hudson Valley Transmitter Podcast. And as always, the Dead Radio Podcast is sponsored by Track 7 Studios, providing quality artistic photography and video services for advertising or events of any size. They will photography anything. And if anybody has been paying attention, I just said the word podcast 13 times. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the show.
This is the latest disclosure in a report from National Civil Defense Headquarters in Washington. It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life.
Welcome to Dead Radio.
We're not doing that.
How did she come to have sex with the dead man?
Don't call me Radio Unit 91.
You're a dead man. You're a dead man!
He's got here in this radio station.
Place where the dead speak.
Rebel Radio! Oh, oh, oh.
I'm a fake?
Yes.
How'd you like to be dead?
You ever think about doing radio?
My team is dead!
But you're not crazy. You're me. And this is just radio.
By the powers vested in me, by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
All right. That was the intro.
Great sound collage.
Thank you.
Sounds a little dead.
Nice.
All right. Well, welcome back, everyone.
I'm not usually the producer either.
I'll fade you down and just kill it, and I'll make it all work for you.
I'm already fading it down.
Oh, okay.
What are you doing?
There you go. Sounds great.
All right.
All right, episode 126 off and running. Ah, I wasn't supposed to use that.
No.
Sorry. Hi, everyone. We've had teasers for the last couple weeks, and last week we finally dropped the big bomb.
Because we couldn't actually believe you were going to show up.
Yeah.
And here you are.
We were nervous that you weren't going to show up, and we're like super excited that you guys are here. For anyone who's just joining us, we have Magus Peter H. Gilmore and Magister Dr. Robert Johnson from the Church of Satan.
Right here from Poughkeepsie,
New York.
We've been talking about trying to reach out to you guys for years, but we're super not motivated sometimes, and we forget stuff. Like, that's written on the wall somewhere over
there. Yeah, in red.
Hell froze over.
Episode,
we're on 126 now, episode 78. We're researching an article about the... I don't know what your affiliation to these guys are, but the Satanic Temple was
nothing to do with them.
Okay, that's what I figured. However,
posers all.
Oh, all right.
Well, they did something super funny, which we thought was great, and then that led us into researching you guys and finding out that you're based here, which is pretty cool.
Well, you know, they're like JV, so whole thing.
Thing that they were doing was just starting an after-school Satan program because they were, you know, apparently in
what state was that again?
And you notice what that acronym spells? After school
Satan.
Oh, ass.
Yeah, the county or the state or something basically passed the law that said religious groups could solicit in schools. So they said, well, if you're going to let Christians do it, you got to let us do it. So yeah. It was upheld in their Supreme Court.
And us and our ignorance.
Yeah.
You know, found our way to you guys. And then we're like, oh, this is much better. And they're local.
Yeah.
Well, we've been around for a while.
Now, why Poughkeepsie? I have to know why.
Well,
Poughkeepsie.
You know, I've lived in Manhattan for 35 years. In Hell's Kitchen, of course. my wife was even born there. But we decided to get a house. You know, my wife was retiring from where she worked. And we thought, we have a good friend here, Joe Netherworld, who actually lives up the block from us. And his house is known as the Halloween House. And people have been going there for forever. He's been there for another 16 or so years more than we have.
Is that the purple one?
His is sort of, yeah, magenta and black and green and
stuff.
All the
cool, the vines and...
Yeah, yeah. It looks very bayou there.
That's wild. I love that. I love that house. It's cool.
And so we came and visited him, and we walked around and saw this amazing house up the block, even though it was beige. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we thought, damn, that looks like a Charles Adams drawing. So not that long after, we decided we were going to look for a house, and that house came on the market. And it had since been raided by the police and because it was full of squatters. Mm-hmm. And most of the windows and doors had been bashed, and it was boarded up. So
it was a fixer-upper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, the dining room was a meth lab.
Oh, wow.
So, and we didn't keep it.
We
have our
say.
Own sources of income, so we really didn't need that. So it became like we had to do everything from scratch. The house is on the National Register, and it's one that needed like everything done. And it took like 5 years alone just to fix all the plaster work. Jesus. In the house. And we kept the plaster. We didn't go to sheetrock. We really wanted it to be restored to its original glory, so we had to rip all these cheap walls. There are people living in every room. Mm-hmm. They had used like hot plates to cook, and there was grease stains and garbage thrown down the vents. It was amazing. It was a total ruin. So it's not.
Guess you really like the place, huh?
Well, you know, if you've seen it, it's pretty unique. I mean, it's considered the architect who did it is a guy who worked on Vassar, and he also designed that big church right across from the Poughkeepsie Grand. He did that the year before he did our house. So our house is considered his best personal home that he ever designed.
Oh, wow.
So it was kind of like, incumbent on us to save it. Mm-hmm. And but we did kind of a fantasy restoration. You know, the house is black, but it has two purples, two reds, and copper as an accent on it. So it really stands out when people go by. Yeah. And we added the good creepy fence with all the sharp fleur-de-lis so that, you know, you can file them like Gomez does. And, you know, nice, a lot of briars and sharp things around the edge.
Everybody I've spoken to, and you know, saying you guys were going to come on, they're like, they're at a picket. I'm like, yeah, the big black house on Main Street. And they're like, that's them? Yeah. Like,
well, who did they think?
Well, I don't know. They were just like, oh, we pass by that all the time. We just think it's a scary house.
And now it's scarier.
Yeah. Wait till you get inside.
Oh, yeah, because
we should do a tour or something sometime and check it out.
Yeah. I don't know how you are with tours.
Well, you know,
uninitiated.
We do Halloween, and people come by. And we have cocktail parties and such. My wife is a cocktailian. She's known for that. So, you know, we always have good things to drink.
Yeah, Halloween's my wife and I's, that's our Halloween. We actually got married on Halloween.
We did too.
Oh, all right.
In 1981. We started the tradition, so you followed it. Good.
Yeah, it wasn't the conversation like, well, that's in 2 years, so I guess we better get on that. Like, if we want to get married on a Saturday, otherwise you had to wait like 7 years.
Yeah. But every Halloween we... our garage, we open up the garage, we decorate the inside, make the kids come inside, get their candy.
And scare them.
Yeah, and scare the ever-loving shit out of them. It's
little brats.
Yeah, it's the most fun. And we get a lot of kids around here, too, so it's our holiday.
They come for us, too. You know, with Joe's house just a little down the block, and he puts out all kinds of animatronics and fog machines and all of that.
Oh, God.
There's always a bunch of costumed or makeuped people around. Some of them even pretend to be animatronics. Mm-hmm. And when the kids go past them, they're not, which really gets them. But we have to get a ton of candy to give out because people come, they drive to come to our houses. Like suddenly, you know, vans are showing up and letting all these people out to just trick or treat.
Oh, that's great, though.
Because, you know, we've now owned the house just as of a couple of days ago for 8 years. Mm-hmm. So that's how long, you know, we've had this presence in Poughkeepsie.
Oh, man. So That's my direct competition.
No.
Now, yeah, a lot of people that I've spoken to about having you guys on, I was like, oh, Church of Satan's coming in. And they were like, what? And I had to kind of explain that it's not like devil worship. I know you're probably exhausted from talking about this. You know, I listened to a bunch of your interviews and everything like that, but I mean, still, there's people out there who have just no idea. Like, everybody was just like, oh, is that safe? Like, what do you mean safe? What are you talking about?
And that's debatable depending on who the person is that you're talking
about. Right. Every person I spoke to, I'd have to clear the air, and they just look at me with this cockeyed stare like, I don't know. I'll have to research that myself, but they won't.
Yeah, of course.
We call that the fear of the S word. Mm-hmm. Because once you throw that word out there, everyone freaks out. Because they're uninitiated, they really don't know the philosophy, and they've never read the Satanic Bible.
Right.
Or any other of the canon of the church. So we're the most fun church there is. We have naked girl altars and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's more than safe. It's a lot of fun.
We went through on the show some of the tenets and stuff, and we're just running them down. I was just like, I can get on board with this. I didn't know, you know.
Yeah,
I'm still new to the whole.
That was during the our Christmas show.
No,
which is, good. It wasn't during that.
It was episode number 80.
It wasn't that.
No, okay. Canadian Pirates.
Okay. Yeah, so we were talking because of that news story, and then we came across your website, and that's where we got familiar with you guys. And I think we started off like reading off the 9 satanic statements.
Yeah.
And what is that I got here?
The 11 rules of the earth.
And 11, 11 satanic rules of the earth. And every one of them, it's like, well, yeah, that makes perfect sense. I want to be a Satanist.
You know, that's right. What
we're the most sane religion there is.
Yeah. Yeah. And Satanism is really based on human nature. Mm-hmm. What Anton LaVey did is said, all these religions are based on denying human nature. So we really need to have one that affirms what we are. And humans are animals, but they're animals that can be rational. But we can't get rid of the animal part, and we have to accept that and celebrate it, not just try to repress it and destroy it or feel guilty.
Yeah.
And he said that there's a demon in man that should be exorcised, not exorcised. And that was the whole point, is to kind of deal with our natures for real. And, you know, it was one of the first religions to be out there and say they accept all forms of sexuality as long as it's between consenting adults. Everything's cool. Like, nobody had really done that before. Mm-hmm. When you think that the Satanism was created by a guy who was born in 1930, you know, somebody from that era, that he'd have that kind of free thinking attitude. It was groundbreaking.
And not wound up like in prison.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Like, to be a Satanist during like McCarthyism times and stuff like that, like how tough that must have been.
Well, it was also propitious timing in 1966. You know, everything it was freewheeling. You know, people embraced the rebellion of the society at that time. So it was real good timing too, and that's magical. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys see your numbers still growing?
Oh, it's never stopped growing.
Yeah.
I mean, people join and leave because they don't really understand what it is sometimes. Mm-hmm. They're thinking, well, I don't know what they're thinking, some of them, because they don't tell us. They will join up and then, you know, a month or year or 5 years later, then they send us in a resignation saying, oh, well, it wasn't for me. And we're like, we never really heard from you, so we don't know how you applied this philosophy or not. But the thing is, Satanism is challenging because what it tells each person is to be the best whoever they are, they can be. Mm-hmm. And that's something that a lot of people can't live up to because you can't blame God or the devil for your success. You know, you can't thank God for successes and blame the devil for failures or vice versa. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all in your head. So if you fuck up, you fucked up. And you have to take that and deal with it and make your life better. And having a philosophy and a religion that basically says it's all your fault. Mm-hmm. But then if you succeed, then it's like, pats on the back, celebrate you, kudos. It's really kind of this wonderful range, but it really expects people to be fully cognizant of what their abilities are and to find their weaknesses and fix them and to find those strengths and promote them.
Right. And so, there is no devil that we worship. There's no anthropomorphic
being. That was going to be, and I knew the answer to the question, but for the audience, I was going to ask.
We're basically atheists, so there is no God-like or demon-like devil that's worship. That's hogwash.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Anybody believes
that's
that.
The sensationalized kind of,
it's ridiculous.
Emo teenager version of Satanism.
It's a symbol of what we do and being a carnal religion. You can't get more carnal than Satan.
And Satan specifically represents pride and liberty and individualism for us. Because if you look back at Milton and other writers, Byron and the Romantics, they saw Satan as a rebel and somebody who was self-actualized and somebody who wasn't going to submit to tyranny. Mm-hmm. So for us, and in Hebrew, Satan specifically means adversary. Mm-hmm. So we are the adversaries to tyranny and oppression and anybody who would try to keep us from being what we are. And that's why it's you got to be somebody with some balls to be a Satanist, because you are going to stand out, you're going to step out, you're not going to follow the herd, whatever that herd is. There's always going to be people around you who are going to try to push you into something. The climates change. You know, when I grew up in the 60s and 70s, coming to consciousness, there was certain kind of things going in the air and what people were fighting in politics. And today we're in this insanely politically correct thing that you can't really say anything.
Unless you work in the White House, then you can say people are sucking their own dicks.
Yeah, exactly.
that's where we're at now.
Breaking news. Yeah. We have populist fascism that can be filthy and uncivilized. And then we have other people who are going to colleges who are so afraid of being triggered that you can't say anything. Like, nobody's learning. Yeah, they are snowflakes. And it's very sad that we're at a point where people can't be challenged. They refuse to be challenged. If you challenge them, they want to,
they're insulted.
They want to beat you up or set you on fire. It's just crazy. And it's like, well, what are these people doing to you? They have ideas. And what do you want to bring against them? Violence. Mm-hmm. And where did that happen before? Yeah. No. I think there are people wearing a funny little thing with crosses, and they burn books and put people in gas chambers. It's like, remember that, folks?
There's no middle ground anymore. Politics has gone crazy.
It's strange how far it swung that way, too. Because,
and how quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're all aware of it. We all read the books, and meanwhile, it's just happening. It's just happening, and letting it happen. I don't, and this accountability for yourself and not others kind of folds into that.
If
you're accountable for yourself and you're not worried about, if that person's saying that, then that's not, as long as it's not affecting me directly or, not causing me pain, then that's it.
Well, but
leave it at the door.
The pain idea is, I think, where people are such babies these days. Because if they're offended in any way, they act like they're mortally wounded.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And if we live in a real world where we're dealing with real opposers, like people who would like to put the full-fledged Sharia law on you, chop your head off, they don't care about ideas. Mm-hmm. It's like if their ideas make you cry, well, they applaud. Because they're here to cut your head off, and if you're whining about that shit, what are you going to do when somebody comes with a machete?
Yeah.
People are not prepared for any kind of adversarial situation in the real world, because Darwin was right. Mm-hmm. We do compete. It's going to be the survival of the fittest, and we're really developing people who aren't fit at all.
Well, that's why I think you should always let your kids play Call of Duty, because they're going to hear the worst shit.
That's a real good point, Peter, because both sides now are looking for their group. Mm-hmm. They can't stand on their own two feet. So it's either they got to be on their right and be in their group, or they got to be in the left and be in their group. So no one's in the middle saying, well, fuck that. I have my own ideas. I was just reading an article about Bill Maher and Esquire, and he really does take that central stance. He calls Trump a whiny bitch, but yet, he'll call out some left-wingers as being assholes.
He called out Obama plenty of times
on his
show
for
some bullshit.
And so those are the kind of models we really need to look towards. And many Satanists, probably all who are card-carrying, are very much like that, independent. We stand on our own two feet.
Well, we also call it finding a third side, because we find that most of the time society is presenting an either-or alternative.
Yeah.
We look at that and say, that's all bullshit. Mm-hmm. You have to make a new synthesis out of things based on what you understand to be true and what works for you. Because, again, in Satanism, I call it something that is I-theism. Yeah. That instead of, you're an atheist, yes, there is no God. But then, who's the God? You're your God. Because you're the most important thing in the universe to yourself. You create your own hierarchy of values. And therefore, the self-centeredness is a positive. It's not something to be shunned or rejected. You're not living for other people. Once you're your own God, then you can be a benevolent God and be as nice to whoever you want to. That's your choice. But you have a central point to make all of your values on. You're not a slave to anybody. And that kind of independence is something that's very difficult to attain and maintain in today's society.
And that's where it's you differentiate yourself from atheist.
Yeah, yeah. It. Well, see, atheism is a broad term. It just means that there's no God. Mm-hmm. It doesn't give you any then kind of equation about the human species.
Right.
Because there are atheists who are like socialists and social justice warriors and all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And Satanism has a really down-to-earth, carnal, skeptical, materialist, pragmatic point of view. All of those values are in play with us. And that we look at the human animal and we deal with it realistically. We don't sugarcoat. We're not idealistic at all. We just look at what's the reality of what people are and try to live with that and work with it. And it's, you know, warts and all. That's why one of the early things that Anton LaVey used to talk about is that we accept human emotions from love to hate, the whole gamut. Mm. And the thing is, love is very rarefied. Do you really love everybody? Do you really get that kind of crazy passion for everybody? No, it's kind of rare. Mm. Same thing with hate. Do you really get that kind of passionate hatred for everybody?
Yeah.
Not likely. So those are your two compass points. Everything else is somewhere in between. But they're all natural. If somebody does something bad to you, does some real injustice, harms you or the people that you love or care for, or the things or principles that you love or care for, then you can hate them or be furious. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, you don't have to ask for forgiveness for that. You embrace it and work through it.
Yeah. It's like the guy who stiffed me on my fence.
Do you want to mention companies?
He folded up his company, too. So you know
there you go.
Yeah, it's the basis of psychotherapy, you know, just let out your anger, deal with it, and fight it off.
But not to you know, beat yourself up over it, because there's been always too much of that. And again, the politically correct thing, like, you shouldn't feel like that, and you shouldn't hate, and you have to love everybody, which is, again, we always find that Christianity was always presenting that to you. Love everybody, love your neighbor, and it was like, bullshit. Mm. People have to earn your love, and very few people will in your lifetime. Mm-hmm. And those people you will respect and you will cherish, and there will be passion. And there should be passion. That's something that's important.
It's kind of how I've been following. That's like just been my compass, not knowing the church or anything like that.
Well, you'd
Satan.
Be surprised how many people say that. You know, they say, well, I read the Satanic Bible, and it resonated with me. And that's what I've been thinking all along. How many times have we heard that?
Oh, yeah.
Millions.
Well, what's fun is that, you know, often when we do things with media people, like, because media people have to have an open mind, unless it's a Christian media or something, or it's Al Jazeera or something, or whatever, you know, you've got some kind of specific agendas you're trying to put out. I don't know that Al Jazeera necessarily does that. They're out of Qatar, aren't they? Are getting in all kinds of trouble these days. But any kind of specific media that is investigative has to have some kind of openness to what they're looking at. And usually the people in them, they may have their own specific, you know, religion and philosophy, but they understand how to suspend that to a certain point so they can look into these other things and explore them and question them with open minds. So Satanism is all about having an open mind and always questioning. Because the skepticism is really an important thing. We do not have any faith in Satanism. There is nothing spiritual. We are completely carnal. We think the spiritual is a complete falsehood. It's fiction. So people often find that's really tough to deal with because they want to comfort themselves with certain things. Like, oh, there must be a heaven. There must be somebody to forgive me. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to make it all better, or there's going to be a reboot at some point. And what we say is there isn't. Every minute you waste is a minute gone. And everything you don't fix in your life will stay broken, and it's on you.
Yeah.
And that is tough, which is why there aren't a lot of people who actually will make a commitment to Satanism, because that's the point. We don't give these hugs and buffers and easy ways out, because we don't think life has an easy way out.
Mm-mm.
No, the way out is not good. Yeah. And it's like, over, you're done.
So that actually, you know, brings up a question. Death, what do you believe happens?
That's it. Done.
Yeah.
Party's just over.
Blackness?
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, the, what is it, the Lutherans? They believe that, too?
I would say that's the only thing similar to the Lutherans in this whole comparison.
So, yeah, just nothing.
Yeah.
I heard in an interview you said you don't fear death.
No. Well, why should you? You wouldn't even be conscious of
it. You're not going to know the difference.
Nope.
No, there's nothing to fear. I mean, it's done. You're asleep forever. Done. Enjoy life now. That's the key.
I've always said that to people. They've asked. I used to work with a born again type Christian guy, and him and I used to get into discussions all the time. It was like talking to a brick wall most times.
Isn't that just maddening?
But he asked me. He goes, "Oh, let me ask you this question." Like he was going to get me. Are you afraid to die? And I was like, "No." It's like, if you died right now, I'm like, if I died right now, well, what happened? You know, I mean, like, I married the girl of my dreams. Good. The girl of my dreams. Just the girl that was able to tolerate me enough, who I love, you know.
Good thing you said that.
Although that you dreamed of having a girl who'd tolerate you, so there you go.
That's more of, you know, you just want someone who can understand and tolerate me. And, you know, I had, you know, dogs, house, everything. You know, we got this show. If I died tomorrow, I'm like, well, I did.
You have a legacy.
Right. I have something. Right. But I'm content with what I have. I don't need to be rich. I don't need anything like that. So if I die tomorrow, it's going to be sad. I don't want to leave anybody behind. But, hey, that's the shit that happens.
You know, the way I always look at it, I wrote a book once a few years back called Occult Investigator. And we did some investigations of the paranormal with a detective agency here in New York. And we did, you know, a number of cases. And we didn't find anything conclusive. There was nothing conclusive, nor did I expect to find anything conclusive as far as paranormal goes. And the way I always looked at it is, you know, ghost hunters this, ghost that, paranormal that. If there was any real solid evidence, especially today in the technological age that we live in, we would have a document. But more importantly, if anybody found anything like that, they'd make a lot of money out of it.
Yeah,
nobody has done it, no one has proven it, no one has made money on it.
I've always said I won't bother watching those shows because when they find something, it'll be on the news.
Right.
Yeah, so exactly.
I'll see it. It'll have 10 million views on YouTube in 24 hours.
So there is no afterlife to deal with. It doesn't happen.
You don't think that there's any kind of like...
Well, your atoms get scattered into the universe they're not going to reform like, you know, in Star Trek and in a simulator or something and become another person. It's not going to happen.
Well, that's why, again, you never should waste any time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really is, every minute wasted is a minute dead.
Yeah.
And that's really something that I don't think most people think about.
Well, you know, the question is, will technology in 1,000 years be able to take your consciousness and put it into a machine? That's debatable. But does that mean you'll live forever?
I don't know if that's you. I think that's a new version.
Well,
right,
of course.
You know what I mean?
That was always the concept in the transport in Star Trek. Like, they dissolved you, but is your consciousness continuous, or is it just a remarkable duplicate of you that really isn't you again?
Yeah, where it's actually like the Prestige, where he dies every single night.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, he drowns every night.
Yep.
Sorry, spoiler alert, guys. Sorry. It's a 12-year-old
movie. It's a good
movie.
Film. Good film.
Awesome. Love that film.
Yeah. But consciousness is something we don't understand. Mm-hmm. And the idea of being able to emulate it is what we're trying to do with AI these days. Mm-hmm. But we don't even know what makes us conscious. That's something that's being debated.
Well, I know Jack Daniels makes me unconscious.
Well, Siri is awful, so we're not there yet.
Yeah.
The imagery is what kind of baffles me, but it's interesting to me, like, you know, the pentagrams, Baphomet, the nude altars and everything like that. Why that?
Well, originally Anton LaVey, who was a showman and he worked in the carnivals and circuses and stuff when he was younger, said, "I need to get attention." The 60s, there was an occult revival going on, but occultism was the usual kind of theistic, airy-fairy kind of bullshit. And he said, "I bet I could leverage this in a way that's earthy and carnal and not just this kind of spiritualist nonsense." I mean, he had friends who were police detectives and cops and lawyers and you know, all kinds of crazy circus people. And I mean, he was a lion tamer for a while and kept a lion as a pet. So, he knows about, like, the world and how people behave. So he thought symbols are powerful. And if you go to somebody even like Ayn Rand, who influenced him, like she would talk about humans being creatures of conceptual consciousness. It means that we take all the things that we perceive and we link them together in percepts and then into concepts and then bigger and bigger concepts. We have hierarchies so we can understand everything that comes in through our senses. So a symbol is something that allows us to sort of access a lot of things simultaneously. Like I look at your symbol for Dead Radio Podcast and I see the bent antennae, but shaped in the sort of biohazard pattern, and you have like the broadcasting, you know, things there. So it's like you've created a powerful symbol there. But in that, it's
created it. He did nothing.
He did.
Awesome. It's very powerful.
Thank you. But
the whole point of a symbol is that it has all these ideas that you can access simultaneously. You don't have to sit down and think about them separately. When you look at an American flag, I've got like a...
See, you're an atheist. Somewhere.
Yeah, so yeah, the thing is that any kind of symbol pulls all these aspects with it simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And so what he did is he looked back and said, all right, Satan means adversary. I want to use Satan as my main primary symbol because I'm setting up an adversary to all spiritual religions, Western, Eastern, Christian, pagan, everything. I'm against it all. And atheism is just a first stepping stone. Like, I need something more focused. So he found this symbol on the cover of a book he had that was the pentagram. Where is it? Over here.
Yeah.
Or...
there you go.
You know, that has on it, you know, around the circle, it says Leviathan in Hebrew, and that means the dragon of the watery abyss, which was the adversary of God in Hebrew mythology. So he's like, all right, this is good. Like, there's the goat, and the goat goes back to ancient Egypt, and it stands for carnality and the hidden force in nature of you know, fleshy consciousness. So he pulls all that together and saying, okay, this is it, and it's going to freak everybody out because nobody used that symbol for Satan before him. It sort of came out of French occultism, and we document it on the website, but it wasn't used in any kind of popular culture sense until he did it. If you watch movies or anything before, and we even have an old porno black mass from like the 20s, and there's no Baphomets in there. There's like six-pointed stars, and there's all kinds of, you know, naked nuns, and we'll have to give you a copy. You'll probably enjoy it.
Sounds great.
But, you know, he really brought that home, that idea, that image, and linked it with Satan, and that became a drama, something that people could look at and be excited by. And then he created the idea of, we all do ritual. We have birthday parties. We have parades. We have all these kind of ceremonial gestures because they have emotional aspects to them. So he said, all right, I'm going to set up a ritual format. So it's a way of being spooky and gothic and fun because it's evocative. Mm-hmm. But also that it's a format for you to release your emotions. But the whole point, too, of that is, even though he gave guidelines, he said, do whatever you want with it because it's all about you. Like, your emotions have to be released. You have to use the symbols and words that are going to bring the most out, the music that you like most. You know, Dr. LaVey was somebody who was a real expert in popular music, like old popular music from the 20s, 30s, 40s. He knew all of that stuff and could play it. He was a really amazing musician. He could just play it out of his head. And he also knew some classical music, too. He was pretty well studied in that as well. Whenever I'd go visit him, he'd practice that up and play Liszt and Wagner and Beethoven, and I'd sing along with some things. We'd have a lot of fun with that. But that was really a way of, everybody had to pick their own music, because like younger Satanists come in and some of them were the stereotype, like the death and black metal and whatever. But then there are Satanists who like, you know, minimalism and who very light popular tunes. But if they have some kind of sentimental value, that's the thing that keys off of them and makes their emotions work. So you could use any music or none at all in your rituals, because it's, again, it's all about you.
Yeah, because that was, you know, my first response to most things is why or how, you know, and that it's a great answer to that question, is why use a symbol, and you can if you want or don't.
Yeah, but also people say, all right, we've got Satanism and it's atheist and all that, and people who come to it from atheism are like, so do I have to do all of this stuff? And the answer is no, because ritual is a tool. And you can open up the toolbox of Satanism and say, oh, that's kind of cool. I could get something out of it. Or you could go, I'm not comfortable with that. But what we've always found with people over the years is that the ones who are often the most reluctant to use it, it affects them the most. Mm-hmm. Because if they sit down there and they get a couple of candles together and a bell and, you know, put a symbol on a wall and then get the kind of meditative focus you need to begin a ritual. Once you ring the bell and say these words, but you take it on yourself. You're not like going to a church and some priest is doing it for you. You're saying it. You're taking command of it. That people get excited. They get that shiver up their spines. And suddenly it's like, oh, now I see what this is about. And whether they even ever do it again, it doesn't matter. But they can see that's what the validity is, that it really affects aspects of human consciousness. And we see it in different cultures. There are different kinds of rituals, and there's different kinds of meditation and such. And it wouldn't be there if it wasn't part of the human animal.
Right, yeah. I want to talk about fear, though. Fear is another, that's a strong emotion. We were talking about Halloween before, you know, luring kids into my garage, trying to scare the shit out of them.
Not a good word. luring in kids in the same sentence, not a good thing.
It's only okay on Halloween.
That fear that strikes people, like I've always found fear, you know, scary movies, the, you know, that kind of dark imagery and everything like that, more fascinating than scared. Like I like when my pulse races when I'm scared. To an extent, you know.
Well, we call that eustress.
Off the cliff, you know, driving off the cliff.
That's what roller coasters give you. Here we go.
Having that little bit of poke where this could all fall apart real quick, like is what I really kind of enjoy, and that's why the imagery and everything like that. I think to me that kind of it struck me as I'm interested in that because it's...
Well, you know, to extrapolate that some, it also becomes... It validates people in a way. You know, another plug for a book. I wrote the Satanic Warlock book, and it's a men's manual. It's the companion to the Satanic Witch.
Yeah.
And by identifying as a warlock, it gives people a badge. It tells them who they are, and that boosts confidence, you know, because they a lot of people who don't really know who they are or are kind of floundering in their own personality grab onto that and say, oh, that's what I am. And that subconsciously boosts their confidence. So there's another method and there's another benefit to all of the symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
And also to go back to the fear aspect thing. When you were talking about it, and I was watching your face, that every time you talked about something that scared you, it's something that really made you feel more alive because it sharpened your perception of your existence because the fear gives you the possibility of non-existence. Because most people kind of take it for granted. I think most people don't even think they're going to die, when you're young in particular. When you get older and you've had some diseases or accidents or whatever, you know that, like, that could happen to you. But often when people are young, it's just something that, like, I'm here forever. It's kind of, like, really assumed. So that the fear part, at whatever age you are, is the thing that gives you that sense that, uh-oh, there is an edge here, and I do have to worry. And it heightens your perceptions and sensibilities, that it makes you it's like a like salt and pepper or spices to whatever that you're doing. Suddenly everything is much heightened.
Right.
And that's why everybody likes it. I mean, everybody likes to be scared.
I'm not even just talking death. I'm just talking stressful, you know, a strange new situation that you don't have complete control over, too. Like that the other thing about it was control over yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that hedonism is not the word you use, but
Epicureanism,
that was the word.
Well, because hedonism is just unmitigated. It's just, we talk about indulgence versus compulsion. And indulgence is your choice. Compulsion means something's driving you. You don't have control over it. When, like, people are addicted to smoking, whatever, it's a compulsion. And for us, it's like, no, it has to be a choice. It has to be something you control, something that you dip into. It's like, oh, there's that box of chocolates. Which one do I want? You don't have to. You're not forced to eat them all. Pick whichever ones you want. But have that kind of control over your life. And that's an important aspect, not to be compelled to do things, but to have that.
Well, because if everybody did whatever they wanted, everyone would be on heroin. You know, everyone.
You know. Well, I don't think I'd agree with that, but you know,
well, if there were no, you know, if you thought about things like there are no consequences, and you know, you don't have to, you know, you're going to indulge to whatever degree,
right?
You know?
Right. Well, that's why we embrace the social contract. Because we don't live by ourselves. Humans are social creatures. We have various tribes. The tribes keep being organized into bigger tribes, you know, cities, states, nations, the globe, and all the different varying cultures and who identifies with what. So because of that, we have to then think about how we're fitting in and where we're going to take ourselves. Like, you know, how are you going to guide yourself out of that by understanding your place in the skein of existence, and therefore you have responsibility. You can't just do anything because it affects people around you. What's funny to me is that I always think about Christians who will always say, well, if there's no God up there to, like, punish you, They don't always say that part of it, but if there's no God up there, like...
That guy I was talking about before?
He brought that up.
He literally said that. If there's no God, then why? What's stopping
you? Yeah, why aren't you raping me right now? And it's like, well, dude, you're not hot.
You know, because you'll go to jail. That's one answer.
Yeah. But that's the thing. But it's also, I think they really think that everybody is scared into behaving and that it isn't a personal choice. Like, we think that, you know, all the people that I know and deal with are people that... Doesn't matter if there are no laws, they treat each other equitably because they choose to. And that you can do that, that we're not, you know, even though we're animals, we're not out of control, we're rational animals.
Yeah.
But those people who need that kind of, you know, whip put over them, I worry about
them.
They're
the ones that have the problem.
Yeah.
I've always seen that as a weakness to me. Mm-hmm. Like just
absolutely.
Needing something to get you over that hump. I wanted to talk a little bit about addiction because... I've people that I know that have addiction issues and my co-host for instance that I lost my train of thought the addiction part with the using some AA or whatever, not AA, but some recovery programs.
Yeah, well, there are secular ones.
There definitely are secular
ones. And that's why we also direct a lot of people to atheist organizations because they have set up things like that.
Yeah.
And
it was hard. It's not, it's pretty rare. At least it used to be.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's more now.
If you look online, you'd be surprised that you know, they may not be everywhere. Like, because every church is pulling that kind of nonsense.
Yeah.
Because they want to suck you into God.
Yeah. We talked about that guy who went back, he went to jail. He was in jail. He had multiple DWIs and spent, you know, 6 months in prison because of it. And when he got out, it was mandated that he join Alcoholics Anonymous specifically, and he couldn't complete the program because he refused to accept God.
Right, right.
And they sent him back to jail.
Wow. That's something that you'd have to get the ACLU involved because that's just nonsense.
Yeah.
And it is growing, you know, that there are options and that they're accredited and actually I think in many cases are probably doing better than those things. Because
you're just trading one addiction for another.
Exactly. Well, that was the old Cheech and Chong line. You know, you used to be all fucked up on drugs, now I'm all fucked up on the Lord.
Yeah.
Really, is that a great alternative?
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly less destructive, I guess, for your... for you personally, for some people, but you know, it's still you're still trading one problem for another. You know,
that's like
chewing nicotine gum for the rest of your life. It doesn't make any sense. You know,
also the idea that if you get into that kind of heavy duty religion, that you're going to start forcing things on other people and making their lives miserable. So that you might have been making their lives miserable one way beforehand, but now you're doing it in a different way.
Yeah.
Have you seen addiction issues within the church?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. There are people come to us and who've had those problems, and they find that when they really start to take command of themselves, they look back and they use Satanism as a strong point to fight the addiction because they say, no one else is going to do this for me, and there's certainly no God to help me on this. And I look to my friends and my family and people that I can trust to help me gain a kind of measure of myself again and move forward. I mean, we've talked to people over the years and seen them, like the people have fought through that. And it's brave and wonderful, and they do. They don't need God. They don't need some kind of rote program to reprogram themselves. That they can work to do it. It's not easy. I have definitely seen people do some really struggles to get through that kind of thing. But it's heroic when they do, and it's very... heartening.
I can definitely see the personal responsibility having, because I left religion when I was very young because I never believed it. I was going through the motions, and then I finally was like, I'm not doing this anymore, guys. To you know, my family, who weren't religious at all, they just didn't want their parents to yell at them for not sending me to church, and that always seemed insane to me. We have to go to church because your grandmother's in town. Why? Why are we doing that? But it was just...
Give granny some gin and stay home.
I just felt like people that were very religious were wasting a lot of time asking a figment of their imagination to help them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's like buying lottery tickets. It doesn't make any sense.
Should have had you guys in for our Moss Spectacular.
Yeah.
We every year on the solstice, we do a Moss Spectacular, and it's keeping Christ out of Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's something I always say.
And we we huddle around.
Say
with
no
friends.
To the Nazarene.
The opiate of the masses. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The best way.
I mean, everybody likes presents, but let's keep Jesus out of
that. It's gotten to the point where I'm like, come December. After Thanksgiving, I'm done. I just want to check out for the next 3 months. I don't even care. It's just the commercialization of it all and just the hypocrisy of everything. It's taken me just completely out of any kind of positive, vibes.
You need to pull out of what you want. Brave. You need to be brave to make that decision.
Oh, for Christmas, everybody's, going to this person, that person's, doing the whole thing. My wife and I, we just go out and get sushi. Like, we don't do anything. We just go out and we see a movie, we go get sushi and we go home. And then that's our day. And everybody thinks that we're nuts. But meanwhile... No,
that sounds good. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, a lot of things. Getting married on Halloween was a thing. Yeah.
When we got married on Halloween, 36 years ago, nobody did that. And we did a Halloween party, and we had a Justice of the Peace because there was nobody else around who would do that for it and formalize it for us.
He got married by a gay man in a costume.
Yeah. Awesome.
He was dressed up as his headless horseman, and he took $50 of his own money and became a minister.
Awesome.
And that was that.
Yeah.
Joe, who lives down the block from me, Joe Netherworld, he did the first legal same-sex marriage in New York.
Ah.
Right at his house.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was, and signed it as a, priest in the Church of Satan.
Oh, fantastic.
It was the very first thing that had been done in New York.
My wife just married her sister and her girlfriend down in Florida. She's a minister.
Awesome. Awesome.
I would just so love to have, a minister from the Church of Satan do my wedding just to make my family super mad. my dad would be like, that's hilarious.
It could be done.
Because, he'll show off with like a cutoff t-shirt and his goatee on a Harley and... then my grandparents from out of state and stuff would come in and be like, this is ridiculous.
Well, I did a biker funeral in the city years ago. One of our members, he was part of a motorcycle club and he passed away. And it was a sort of non-denominational chapel in the city, but they had his bike outside, beautifully polished and set up, the riderless horse thing. And then he painted and they had his artwork inside. And they also had... he was in his casket, but in like King Diamond makeup because he liked that. And he had, all of his jewelry and they had his shirt open so you could see his tattoos. And it was pretty remarkable. And the place was totally cool with it. And I officiated at that. And all the people who showed up were very emotional. It was fantastic. And they understood that, this is what he cherished and these are what his values were. Mm. And they stood up for them. And it was fantastic. It can be done, these kind of alternative things. Certainly weddings, our priesthood marries people all over the place. And, that's a thing that can be done. And, again, funerals happen, and we have baptisms, but they're not really necessary because what happens is we don't do them to kids who are young or babies or whatever because they don't have any choice in it. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, if you have a kid and they reach a certain point where they understand Satanism and they want an initiation of some sorts, the parents can do that with their kid. But it has to be completely willing and understood. Mm-hmm. And for adults who come in, we have a baptism rite too. But, most people don't really feel it because what we say is Satanists are born, not made. Mm-hmm. And if you just recognize that that's your nature and you read the literature and go, I agree with all this. It's like, right there you are. You always were there. Mm-hmm. So you don't even need that unless you really like that kind of initiatory ritual. And then that's something that's done. But we find that these days it's not something that most people feel they need because they're like, I always felt this way. Yeah. And now I'm recognizing it. It's just like bingo. I don't even need to do something to mark this. When the Church of Satan started, I think more people did because they would be mired in other religions. Mm-hmm. And for them, it was a way of saying, I'm breaking free of this and really making a different commitment to this philosophy that puts me at the center of my life. But nowadays, it's not so difficult for people, I think.
I feel like the majority of people, at least younger people, are just totally fine with moving towards a more secular society, not having that influence. I mean, I don't really know anybody my age that really is very religious and goes to church and actually subscribes to things. you know, a couple people, I'm Roman Catholic, but I haven't been to church in 6 years. So you're not really.
Well,
right?
It's very geographic now, too. Yeah. You know, you go up into the Midwest, up north, Midwest, you're going to find a whole different idea going on.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is, I do notice it more in more liberal areas, and where we live is extremely liberal. I'm not going to say, I guess I could. Better educated people tend to not be as religious.
Oh, I think they've actually done surveys that really do show that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But I've also seen things in my life where, you know somebody with an accent that you can't understand at all, they're from a very poor area. You know, they're not as well educated. And I think that a lot of those things come down to it. And when people are well educated and in, you know, a safe place where they can grow as a person, they might not need to latch on to those things. They're not wishing for things as much.
I better get me some edumacation.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think it comes down to back to that thing where you're spending a lot of time asking a figment of your imagination for things. You know, maybe if you aren't want for things like healthcare, you might not have to do that.
Yeah.
You know,
but what we found too, though, it's kind of interesting that there'll be people who might be brought up with religious people around them, and they'll always feel they're out of step with it.
Yeah.
And they might not have a great education, they might not be exposed to a lot, but they just know from the start that they are not part of what's going on around them.
Yeah.
And that's why I always say that Satanists are a meta-tribe. Our kind of people who are born that way are not the most common people on the planet, but when they happen, they see that they are not part of everyone else, what we call the herd.
Yeah.
And what we define Satanists as, we call ourselves an alien elite, because we're alienated from most of the herd culture around us. And we're elite because we're the ones willing to step up and say, no, I'm not part of that. Have that bravery to say, I'm going to take a different route. And they really come from all over the earth in all these different cultures. It's kind of amazing that, especially, you know, I've been running this organization since 2001, and finding that my book's been translated into 7 different languages, and the Satanic Bible has been into about 12, I think, and people just come from all over the place and they read these things and go, that's been me all along, and I never knew how to label myself. And I know that I can be part of this. There are other people like me. Doesn't matter that they're in other countries. They might not be close. I mean, we get people from the Middle East who, you know, have been like raised in believing Allah and doing all this crap, but they didn't. And they had to be kind of quiet about it because they might not survive.
I grew up Catholic. I had a little Bible next to my bed, and I had the rosaries and the whole 9 yards. I used to go to church, but we never went to church. Went to church with my grandmother when I went to visit her and everything. But every time I went, I just kind of was just like, this doesn't feel right. It's not, it doesn't make sense. And I couldn't, but I still followed it because I didn't want my...
Yeah, it's what you do. You don't want to get yelled at.
Yeah, I didn't want to get yelled at. I wanted to make sure that, you know, I didn't know the devil and all this nonsense, but finally, I don't even know when it was. It just slowly, finally, just decided that I just didn't want to pay attention anymore. And finally, one day, I just said, "Fuck this! I'm just gonna do me."
Because you aren't afraid anymore.
Yeah,
it's all fear based.
Yeah,
yeah, and
that's
and
the thing.
For me, I went years saying that I was agnostic, which I think is kind of, I now feel like that was just me. It's a half measure.
You're preparing the way.
Yeah. And then one day I was like, you know what? No. And I've always said, I'm not anti-theist. I'm not going to judge you for your choices, at least not out loud. But, you know, you do whatever you want. Just don't push it on me. That was the whole thing. So if you want to be religious, that's fine. But if you're going to come at me with all those things, I'm going to come at you with facts. And then it's going to be a slightly different conversation than you were hoping to get out of it.
Right. See, you're really following the same path that so many of our people do.
Yeah.
It's exactly that thing. That they really, you know, the agnosticism thing, we still get people who approach us, can I be an agnostic and be a Satanist? And I'm always like, why are you an agnostic? Yeah. Have you not really examined this question? Because Satanism is a faithless religion.
Yeah.
And that agnosticism means that you have a faith that there could be something like that. But they don't even want to take it to the aspect of, Well, you know, it could be like an elephant on a platform, you know, with angels dancing around.
How
like,
fucking cool.
Like, yeah. You know, or you know,
I'd pay
you know Marilyn Monroe, that. Like, yeah. You know, the universe is on her bosom or something.
Yeah.
Like,
that's not real.
Yeah. Damn, well. don't tell people.
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, the only thing that, like, I do wish there was an afterlife, but I feel like that's not very likely. And there's tiny little bits of scientific evidence that show there might be a little something. But I kind of highly doubt you're going to be a sentient human somewhere else.
Right, right.
But that, you know, that's more of like, that'd be nice. I don't really think it's true, though, you know.
Same guy. I'm going to keep going back to this guy because...
you can say his name, it's fine.
His name is Drew. we used to, my old job, I used to be on the road a lot, 2-hour travel here and there, and it'd just be him and I sitting there talking. And, you know, religion would always come up. He said to me one time that if the whole world followed Christianity, a Christian belief, then we'd all be better off.
Yeah, because they would have, like, yeah, they'd kill off 70% of the population.
Well, no,
like
not even that.
To.
If everybody's, yeah. If everybody has the same mentality, then yeah, of course, it makes sense. But if everybody was fucking, were pagan, same thing. If everybody was Satanist, same thing. It just...
The argument I've heard all my life is, you know, there are no atheists in the foxhole. So that's where you start to get into real serious debate with people. You know, mm-hmm. when people are faced with death, face to face, when you know in a minute you could be gone, you're having a heart attack, you could be gone. That's when you really know. Then again, that's a function of your bravery. I mean, that's a function of you having conditioned your mind to an extent over your life to understand I have to live life to the fullest, and if this is it, I did my best.
And there are many Satanists in the military. So there's plenty of Satanists in the foxhole, and they're usually very well trained and have no compunctions about killing the enemy. So they're good to have at your side.
Can we talk about old Nick a little bit?
Oh, we can talk about old Nick as much as you would like.
Am I balling this, or are we having this... conversation about the church, but you're here with the with the magazine.
Yeah.
reading here.
I bring the girls to the party.
Smoking and drinking Advice, ADD Vice, a cigar and port wine primer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what caught my eye. I was like,
again, you know, it's indulgence, it's Epicurean delight, and this is what we live for. I'll give you a little history about how
Please.
Old Nick started. In 2006, we had quite an event in Los Angeles, at 6606,
mm-hmm.
and it was a major event for the Church of Satan. And in preparation for that, my background is in journalism and magazine production. I worked for High Society and Cherry Magazine and Playboy, so I've got a long history on that. So at the time, I was actually working for Playboy, and I said, well, you know what I've always wanted to do is to create something that appeals to both of my most important things in life, and that was the magazine business and the Church of Satan. So I said, well, the magazine business, of course, that I'm involved with now is about porn. So let me create a Playboy with horns. And that's what I did. It was really done as a lark for the membership that came to L.A. We had quite a number of people there. So I put this magazine together, and I said, "Now, you know, I'll borrow some Playboy ideas here and make it the only magazine that is decidedly of interest to those with a dark bent." And Satanism is a part of it. It wasn't endorsed by the Church of Satan, but it certainly was influenced. So that's how I created Old Nick, and Old Nick is a euphemism for Satan,
yeah.
The devil. The response was overwhelming. People just said, wow, this is so cool. No one has ever done this. There's no other magazine like this. And the rest is history. I created another issue and another. And we've just celebrated 10 years of publishing last year. This is the 10th year anniversary issue.
And this is
the first one. You'll see it's a little different because I didn't think there'd be a second issue. Just like Playboy. it was the same idea. And, you know, all of the things that appeal to men, and it is a men's magazine. Women, some women enjoy it, but it is a men's magazine, and it is it does touch upon all the things that make life worth living. You know, it is the cigar smoking and a good drink and having a good time and travel and all of that, that good life stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And also I peppered it with satanic wisdom, satanic philosophy, satanic thought, because that's what it is. We are the most carnal religion in the world, so it fit perfectly. It was just a propitious combination of things that at that moment at 6606, and it just gelled. It was another one of those magical moments in our history of the Church of Satan.
Yeah, it was wild. I haven't, you know, as the first time I've heard of it was, you know, mm-hmm. when you guys were coming on. I haven't had a chance to really rifle through them.
Well, sure.
But now we have them, so.
So he was a little worried about you guys coming on. Because I like put, you know, I basically copied and pasted your bios off of your you know, various sources. And he's like, I was a little nervous. And then when I told him, I was like, yeah, it's like a high-end Satanist kind of, you know, it's kind of a porn magazine, but not like, you know, it's more sensual. And he was like, oh, that makes me feel better.
Well,
yeah, he was worried that it was going to be super serious. We were gonna be like way out of our element and all of that.
You know, yeah. Interestingly enough, over the years, it has grown mm-hmm. out of the realm of people who are even interested in Satanism. I mean, mm-hmm. I could probably safely say thousands of readers who really are just kind of on the edge of Satanism or are curious about it because of, you know, we subscribe to something called the law of the forbidden. And when something is forbidden, it's that much mm-hmm. more alluring. And there are a lot of people out there, and I get this response from them that, oh yeah, you know, those girls, maybe they're altar girls, and some of them are. You know, some of the girls who have appeared in the magazine have not appeared anywhere else. They're newbies to the whole business, but they are Satanists, and they enjoy our philosophy and our religion. So we use that, and I hear this all the time. You know, this magazine really is something different, and you know, I could read an article about, you know, fashion and how, you know, Satanists subscribe to the idea that we can live on our own time frame in our own era, you know, mm-hmm. and whatever era resonates with us. If we want to be hippies, we could be hippies. If you want to be a 20s gangster, you could be a 20s gangster. Whatever that time frame resonates with a person, you could live that, and we propagate that. You know, I particularly like the whole Rat Pack era. You know, that fits perfectly with me because I'm an old fuck. But that's beside the point.
But again, just a quick aside, sure. We really had a real Rat Pack Satanist. Sammy Davis Jr. was
yep.
a member.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I was mm-hmm. about to mention that, sure. So
that's awesome. That's a good get.
And Jane Mansfield too.
And Jane Mansfield.
And then,
and interestingly enough, Sinatra himself in a Playboy interview really talked about how religion was a farce.
Yeah. So it's like he and Sammy, we think, had some amazing conversations.
Yeah.
I remember hearing about Jimmy Page and Anton LaVey. Just, you know,
well, he was more into Crowley, and he bought the Boleskin house and
yeah.
all of that. Like, he was definitely into, you know, ritual magic and all of that
yeah.
sort of thing.
Well, once I heard that as a kid, you know, my dad basically fed me, you know, Jethro Tull, Led Zeppelin, and all those classical, you know, classic rock bands. I was like, oh, he's got something to do with the devil? Then I don't like that, because they told me I'm not supposed to like that.
but that's why you did like that.
Yeah. The law of the forbidden, that's
kind
of
understood. That's and that's the appeal of Old Nick as well to this day. You know, when we have something in there that's a little off skew or a little like a nun or, you know, something that's not quite what you'll find in every other girly magazine.
Right.
It really does better.
Well, you tastes also change over mm-hmm. the course of time. Yeah. Like you start, like if you find you can, you know, you shed that, you know, weight of, you know, judgment and whatever, and then you start, you know, taking a peek at other, you know, things in life that you want to indulge in or whatever. And, you know,
Well, I could definitely see this like sitting in any tattoo shop. You know what I mean?
Well, tattoo shop, nothing. Yeah. I'm just, that's going to be for me down here.
When my wife is not home.
I purposely did not make it a typical porn mag to work within the porn world as it stands in the last 10 or 15 years. You know, there's no real full frontal nudity.
It's more like
no boy girl stuff.
Yeah, sensual, not as sexual.
It's again to tease.
Yeah.
Because what you don't see.
Yeah, because anybody can go on Pornhub and get whatever they want now. You know, you gotta set yourself apart.
It sparks your imagination more, which is the basis of eroticism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like this photo right here. She's pale white in a bathtub of black ink. Mm-hmm. Like that's
it's awesome.
Just a cool concept in itself, just as a photo, as an art photo. But, can't wait to read the rest of it.
I can't wait to read all of them.
The articles, I mean.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, there are good articles, too.
Yeah, and there are quite a few articles. You know, we've interviewed some major people in the church, including Magus Gilmore, Peter, my good friend here, and many others. And we always have something in the back of the magazine called What Sort of Man Reads Old Neck? And it gives you a little bio of one of the guys who are doing it. I think that one is Adam Cardone. Did I give you that one? Whatever. But we do that a lot, too.
And you just won an Alt Porn Award.
Yes, we did. We won the Alt Porn Award for Best Magazine, which was quite an accomplishment. We beat out, I think, 8 or 9 other magazines, some of them tattoo magazines and another porn magazine. So we did quite well.
Find it's difficult selling print?
Yes.
Do you guys have an online presence, though?
I'm on the site.
Yeah, I checked out the site, but you got to be like a member, right, to really see a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of an antiquated thing, so it's evolving, and this is going to be, I'll give you a little heads up here, some information that other people might not know yet. But
Dead Radio exclusive.
It's an exclusive. Old Neck is going to be part of the new Satanic Warlock site.
Okay.
So from the book, The Satanic Warlock, we've decided to develop this online presence, which is going to be a hub for satanic men or any man who's interested in lifestyle kind of things, some sexy stuff, advice, things like that. And Old Neck is now going to be part of that whole website. So every issue of Old Neck will be archived on that site as well. So members who join the site will have access to all of the publications.
Oh,
so
cool.
That's sort of a side answer to your question. Is print difficult? Yeah, it is. People don't want to pay a lot of money for a print magazine anymore when they can get it digitally. But we also have a digital presence at skinmags.com with video. So you can get it there, too, and that'll continue. But it's not so much the product itself. It's not so much the tangible product that it's the idea. And the idea can grow. You know, things have grown out of Old Neck. We've done shows. You know, we're going to sponsor some new things, seminars. So along with Satanic Warlock. So Satanic Warlock sort of grew out of Old Neck in certain ways. Because what I was doing in Old Neck originally was entertaining men. And that meant sometimes giving them advice or giving them knowledge or imparting Church of Satan philosophy to them. And that's what the Satanic Warlock did, and that's what it'll continue to do. So in effect, the Satanic Warlock is the next step. And Old Neck will still be part of it.
What about the satanic witch?
What about it?
My wife's a bit of a feminist, so I guess
we know we were going to go there.
my job is to ask, is there the other side?
The satanic. Yeah, let me boil it down real simple because this is a question that pops up all the time.
My brain's not smart. My brain's not so good.
That's what I always say. the satanic witch liberated women back when it was read. It told women, basically, you have the power to get whatever you want in life by using your feminine wiles and your witchy ways. And the smart man will understand this, and enjoy that and go along with it. And what's better than that when both parties get what they want? There's nothing wrong with that. So, you know, the feminist argument that, well, you're objectifying or you're not treating women as equals is not true in Satanism.
I wouldn't say that's all feminist, though. No. She's very much against, like, the kind of the bullying type, you know, men are evil type bullshit. Yeah. So, right. Well, I guess I should have been a little bit more clear. Like, you have old Nick and Satanic Warlock, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. coming out of that as a online presence, but the female side of that mm-hmm. as a like a
Satanic Witch,
women's magazine.
The
Satan's Playgirl.
there is something that the girls did, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. We actually had some of our witches were doing a magazine. I think they did a few issues of it, and they may bring it back.
Oh,
but
good.
It was again, you know, them kind of coming together and sort of adapting the principles from the Satanic Witch to, you know, the 21st century. Because what we have now... See, when Anton LaVey came out with the Satanic Witch originally, feminism was sort of taking women's traditional powers away by saying, well, you can't use what you've usually used to ensorcel men. And they were like...
There was sort of like a desexualization that went along with it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so he said, no. You can be as powerful as you want. You are men's equal, if not superior, in most cases.
Yeah, you can be sexy if you want to, but you should also be able to vote and do all
exactly.
of those things.
Exactly. But don't feel that you have to have that taken away from you. So we've gotten to a point now where it's sort of been beaten to death on some levels. I mean, still women aren't paid equally. This is an ongoing struggle in our society, but it's a broader societal issue that there's been ingrained, you know, putting women down in so many aspects, and we're always supporting like women being treated everybody being treated equally, because, you know, again, the LGBTQ community has been oppressed in so many ways. And we have there's a gay magazine that we have now. It's put out by Aden Arden, who wrote a really interesting book, Militant Eroticism, and he presents that perspective. So suddenly he's got, you know, the second issue, I think, just came out. And
it's called Horns.
Yeah, Horns. And he put out the Satanic Warlock calendar. So there's, you know, sexy hot warlocks that men and women can enjoy. And so we try to cover all the bases. Yeah. It's that everybody... you know, people used to call things like liberation movements in the past. You know, everybody needed a something liberation movement. And Satanism has always been the ultimate liberation movement, because it's all about being who you are and not to feel oppressed in any way, shape, or form. So that we can sort of encourage all these things. And right now, also, the sort of adjunct to Bob's book, The Gay Satanic Warlock, is being written by a guy who's was going to be in the Catholic priesthood and moved away from that to be a computer programmer. And is now, you know, and he's gay, and he's going to write this whole book about his journey and how gay men can use their warlock aspects to be even more empowered in the 21st century.
Wow.
You know, the book that I had written, the Satanic Warlock, really does take a lot of these issues into consideration, especially in seduction and appeal of the sexes. And this is really just a wake-up manual for men, for satanic men, to say, this is the way it is. You know, take out all of the nonsense that you've been hearing. This is the way it is in the real world. And interestingly enough, I've not gotten one pushback letter from a woman about the book. Mm-hmm. Not one. One was kind of, well, it's a little too... red pill for me, and if you know what that is, it's the whole pickup artist world. Mm-hmm. You know, red pill is extreme masculine. And blue. Anyway, it was a little too red pill, but I still enjoyed it because it hits home. No pushback from women because they understand, they get it. This is just the way it is. Yeah. We had to rip apart all of the window dressing and understand how, you know, it's like the old song, you know. As time goes by, a kiss is still a kiss. Mm-hmm. These things still apply. So just wake up and do the same things.
Well, also, you were mentioning, too, that we've gotten responses that women like satanic warlocks because they're intriguing and exciting, because they're men who are really self-realized, mm-hmm. and that they're not a bunch of wimps who are like, well, I don't know what I want to do. I don't know how to do, because I think women enjoy, you know, women who are confident like men who are confident.
Absolutely.
For the most part. They want a good counterpart, mm-hmm. but somebody who can energize them. And I think his book can help a number of guys to do that, to find a different kind of focus or to try something different, mm-hmm. because they're different kind of archetypes, you know, based on physical abilities, mm-hmm. you know, shapes, body sizes, but you know, different class kind of things that you might play with, something more rock star oriented, something more like blue collar. There's, you know, something very sophisticated or something even like piratical. There's all different kinds of archetypes that can be employed, and it could be exciting to a guy to say, you know, I kind of like that. I've never tried that before. So let me go with that and see if that, you know, and see what kind of response I get. You might get somebody laughing at you. But then you might find some other ladies following you home. You know, so it's kind of like, yeah, you know, because again, if you don't know all the aspects of yourself, it's a guide to help you explore those and to not leave things unexplored in yourself.
Right. Mm. And it really pushes forth the idea of confidence. You know, confidence is the key. Confidence is the key to everything. And, you know, very simply, confidence is just practice, being expert in something. You know, if you're driving a car and you've never driven it in the rain before and you're afraid to drive it, and you drive it in the rain and you get back safe. You drive it in the rain again, you're back safe again. Drive it in the rain third time, you're driving with one hand. That builds your confidence. So that's the cornerstone of what warlocks need to do. The way I describe it in the book, it's the warlock self that has to be developed. And by the same token, it's a bitter pill of reality as well. I have something called the Satanic Masculinity Meter in there, which is basically a chart with the different types of women and the type of men who can get them. You know, we all hear, well,
I would love to, like, put you on that and just figure out where you're sitting.
Well, that's, like, that's going through my head right now. I'm like, I want to take that test.
Right. Well, you know, it's pretty much saying, you know, if you're rich, famous, you can probably have a Victoria's Secret model. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're taking the bus to work with a brown paper bag, lunch,
we're in a coffee shop.
You're gonna date the girl in the bookstore.
What if you ride a bicycle and work at a coffee shop?
good luck.
You're luckier.
good luck. But I'm not trying to say it's impossible for men to overcome this. You can, and there are exceptions. We have something in the archetypes called the Everyman, who is not that, but somehow he has some other power. You know, his humor, his intelligence, his son. It can happen. But I wanted to have a real cold slap in the face to guy saying, don't get frustrated. Don't try to keep getting these super hot chicks who are going to dump you in a heartbeat when you know that you're not going to get it. And you're going to just keep getting rejected and feeling like shit, and it's going to go on and on and on. So get real, first of all, and then apply principles to get you to where you want to be. That's really the lesson.
Be honest with yourself.
You have to be honest. You have to be brutally honest.
You guys should totally make like a satanic dating app. I really think that would do well.
That's called Pitchfork.
Yeah, there you go.
Because they're like, which pile are you in? Which pile are you in?
Yeah, there you go.
Instead of swiping left or right, you swipe down.
That's kind of that's kind of what we've based this what we've based this show off of is honesty too. Like, there's, you know, when these mics go on, I try not to hold back, and in that, you know, it translates to life too. At the same time, I find that if I'm trying to put on a face or I'm trying to act a certain way around a group of people who are, where I'm not comfortable, if I have anxiety around, if I try to put on a show, it doesn't go over well, and I fall apart.
You can't bullshit confidence.
No.
It's got to be there or it's not. And the only way it gets there is by practice.
Yeah. And, you know, I've found that also just being, you know, just being honest with yourself and being you and being who you are.
And bobbing ends your head up in that weird way. Yeah, you're just doing it. What are you
well,
doing?
But you see right here, you're demonstrating what's going on. Your confidence in what you do.
But it
translates.
Yeah, that translates into confidence for me, at least. Right, you know, when I see somebody who's just not afraid to be who the hell they are, that, like, you know, that kind of pumps me up too. So I get excited and you know, I want to join in with them, and you know, their passion or whatever. But yeah, that's, and you know, coming back around, that's another thing about the church that I've really come to just enjoy. I've watched, you know, all day today, just, you know, boning up watching Anton LaVey. He's just sitting there with this asshole fucking interviewer. I can't remember the guy's name.
Oh, Joe Pine.
Jesus yeah. Christ. I want to reach through the... I wanted to go back in time. I want to invent a time machine, go back in time, and punch him in the face during that interview. He's just being a douche. But Anton was just unfazed. He was just like, all right, fine. We'll talk about that, and then we'll just go on to the next thing, on to the next thing. He did not give a fuck. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So that's where that's what that is.
Yeah. No, you know, that's how you have to do it. You just have to keep going. Right. And you know what you're talking about, and you know, I've encountered a lot of shit like that too. I've had some amazing people talk to me over the years. You know, it was with Ahmed Zappa, we did a really funny thing, and Tom Likas, who was a real nasty guy, everybody is afraid of him and terrified. And when I went on his show, he was like, "Oh, he loved me." He's like, "Come back whenever you want. This is really cool. I can get into your philosophy." And Jay Thomas on Sirius, he had Kevin Meaney on before he passed, and they were afraid of me. And I mean, yeah. and people are terrified to go on Jay Thomas's show. And like afterwards, they're like, "Oh, well, you know, we liked him and we agreed mostly with him." So, But that I think that's kind of the bottom line is that. We're not here to bullshit. We're not putting on a show. I mean, as much as, you know, when we do ritual and things like that, it's obviously a show. We say it's a show. But when we're talking about the way the world works, we're really being earthy, carnal, down to,
again,
the brass tacks.
When you're putting on the show, you're being honest and saying, this is just a show.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
That's, you know.
No hocus pocus.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Real quick, what do you feel about circumcision?
I don't think one should do that to a kid, because it's his body. You know, there are people I know who've had it done in adulthood because they felt it was going to be better. And, you know.
The only reason that stuck is you're talking about baptism and everything.
Yeah,
early.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, no, I don't think you should mutilate anybody against their will.
Mm-hmm. I think there should be law, no circumcision under anyone less than 5 inches.
You got to keep, you know. You got to keep what you got. You can't be shaving points.
That's right. If you're less, you can't. You can't give up.
And hold
any.
On to every inch.
That's right.
Yeah, my I don't know. It's, my sister-in-law just got married. Her and a girlfriend are having a baby, and they're having a boy. So I was like, the other night I was, you know, we got that big pile of stuff on our table. It was all their, you know, gifts and everything like that. And I'm looking at all of them, and I'm like, what are they going to do about the circumcision? Oh boy, I got a question to ask because I could, like, you know, over years, it's just,
you know, there is a medical situation. I also hold a doctorate in human sexuality, so I know a bit about this.
All right,
there is, medically speaking, not to get too graphic, but under
do
the
it.
Foreskin,
there's a dildo on the table.
Yeah, there. Under men,
you can demonstrate.
This is disgusting.
It's a circumcised dildo.
men will build up smegma under the foreskin.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a natural thing. And if it's cleaned continually every day, maybe twice a day, you're fine. If you're not, then it can cause medical problems. There's also a condition where the foreskin becomes too tight. It's like a priapus type thing where it becomes
Sam
too tight.
Pomone.
It retracts, the skin will actually break. This was a common thing that went on in the days of AIDS, and a lot of men got circumcised then as not to bleed in the situation.
The I had read quite a bit about this because I'm going to have kids, so it's a decision that I have to, and I am circumcised if anyone cares.
Are you under 5 inches?
No.
Okay.
So there have been a lot of studies done about AIDS in Africa, and the transmission is a lot less when people are circumcised without a condom.
That's right.
So I feel like that's a medically valid, and it's statistically proven. It's something that you can show numbers. But when it really comes down to it, it's your kid, your values, it's your decision. You know, all you can do as a doctor is say, these are the reasons why you might want to do it. It's your decision.
Yeah.
I don't think religion should have anything to do with it.
No, no. Well, what was interesting is a coworker of mine, she was going to have a kid, and was when she went with her husband to the doctor to sort of discuss that very topic, he said, well, what's the husband like? Because, you know, he's going to see you, and do you want your kid to feel the same or different from your husband?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a thing. Like, it's like if daddy looks one way and you look another, then it's like, well, is that good or bad or weird? It's an issue. And then he also said, and do you want him to get head? So maybe, you know, the husband was circumcised and he said, you might want to go that way.
Yeah.
But, all joking aside, it is something that, you know, there are different aspects to it that you have to think about and consider.
Yeah. I did have a conversation with someone. I won't mention her name, but it was a while back, and she had just had a baby and she was really pushing back. Her husband wanted to have the baby circumcised and she did not. And I was having a conversation with them while they were still making the decision. She hadn't given birth yet. And I said to her, I was like, have you ever been a man? Have you ever had a penis? Like, that's, to be honest, I think this is a call that dad needs to make. He's the only one with any real life experience for that. And she was like, oh, I feel like such an asshole. Because of all the times she has said to him while she was pregnant, you don't know how I feel. And so she wound up, I don't know what they did, but she agreed to go with the father's decision. So that was fun.
But definitely no mutilation of the body based on religious principles. We definitely stand with that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Makes sense to me.
So we've been talking for an hour and 20 minutes about. Did you guys want to take a break or you want to keep going?
It's up to you. Whatever is good for you.
Yeah, we can keep going. So we've got a few people checking in. Oh, my God.
It's a bunch of nonsense.
So Tony's an idiot. We're not reading any of his responses. So Anthony from work asks, sorry if this was covered, but how do you join the Church of Satan?
Oh, it's easily explained on the website.
Yeah.
But for us, it's just a $200 membership fee, and it's for a lifetime membership. Mm-hmm. You do it with PayPal, it's $208 because it has a fee for doing things like that. But that's all that we ask for people for money. It's like most religions actually tithe you on some level. You know, you're giving constantly.
Yeah, someone said, do they send around a collection like a church, but instead of money, do you pay in blood?
No.
Have you been paying attention to the conversation? I don't know who this person is.
Well, people like to fantasize that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think part of the reason that people become interested because they have watched horror movies, and they're like, well, is it really like that? And when you go back to something as interesting as Rosemary's Baby, which the author Ira Levin wrote because he was influenced by the press that the Church of Satan was receiving. And he was like, well, what if the next door neighbors were Satanists? And what if there really was a Satan and you could make a baby for Satan, which is not what the Church of Satan was saying, but that's where his thought led him. But when that book came out, the publicists of that and the movie that was then in the works, because it happened like immediately, when book and movie was going to come out, they approached the Church of Satan and said to Anton LaVey, could you help publicize this? And he was like, sure, you know, you got to pay me, of course.
Yeah.
And they did. And
because Satanists are pragmatic.
Oh, absolutely. And what, they did is they put out a press release that kind of hinted that Anton LaVey may have played the devil in the movie. And they said, look, we know you didn't, but go along with it. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, sure, you know, you can hint all you want and people can freak out and worry about it. But they actually had him do a publicity stunt in San Francisco where when the movie was premiered there, they had him show up in a black limo with guys in robes, and they all came into one of the premiere screenings, and then there was press there to ask questions about Satanism, and they made buttons. Around the country, the advertising campaign was Pray for Rosemary's Baby, but the buttons they made for that were Pray for Anton LaVey. Those are very rare. I do have some. the whole point is that years later, people tried to say, well, you know, Anton LaVey tried to piggyback on that and somehow was lying about this. And you know, we have all the correspondence. We know exactly what went on. And it was like, no, they asked him to help publicize it. They actually suggested that, asked him to go along with it. And he's like, whatever you want to do. You know, you're paying me nicely. This is fine. But the book was influenced by the Church of Satan quite clearly. Yeah.
When did that? I'm trying to find out when Rosemary's Baby came out. Oh, that was in 68. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, could that have fed into the whole Satanic Panic thing?
Well,
the 80s?
That was much later. And yeah, what started the Satanic Panic were Christian evangelists trying to drum up this idea.
Right, right.
Like, first there was Michelle Remembers, where a guy hypnotized a woman who later became his wife, and she started to say, that a group actually called the Church of Satan was like had been for years like molesting her and mutilating her and abusing her. And the Church of Satan actually, Anton LaVey sued them and got them to take the references to the Church of Satan out of the book. So it's like most people don't know about that. But that was like the seminal book, this idea that there was some kind of hidden group that was taking people in against their wishes and doing terrible things to them. Right after that, this book came out called The Satan Seller, a guy named Mike Warnke, who was an evangelical Christian. He had also been like a really messed up drug user. And he started to say, well, there's this satanic cult that's much darker and scarier than the Church of Satan. And they're global and that they actually have demons that will teleport you. And they do rituals where they cut off, you know, you'd put your finger down and they'd cut off the end of it and everybody would eat your little fingertip. And it was just nutty stuff.
How many people is a fingertip in a field?
Yeah, but people ate that up, especially the Christians. And
no, see, pun intended.
Figuratively ate it up.
There became this whole network of evangelicals pushing this idea to scare folks into their religion. It's like, oh, well, you know, you got to join our church and pay our dues, or else the devil's going to get you, or the devil's minions. And it was so funny because, like, we used to call this stuff Geraldo Satanism, because what Geraldo did is put like every friggin' week, you know, some new show about somebody who was like either putting graffiti under a bridge or it's, you know, was in the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And the absurdity of this, that it could go from, you know, molesting kids at a daycare center and all of those cases like McMartin, which is still, I think, the most expensive trial in the United States history, that it was actually an alcoholic woman who talked some kid into saying, you know, nonsense and made claims. And they're like, oh, yeah, there are tunnels under the daycare center and kids are being taken to Mexico. Yeah. And it was like there's no way any of this could actually happen. It was all fantasy. But there was such a craziness, and that's why we call it the Satanic Panic. It was a hysteria that happened where the media got into it because it was easy. It was like they got huge ratings. I went on all these shows and they would put me in a separate green room because everybody was afraid of me. Like, well, he's the Satanist. Maybe he's like taking kids away and having them mutilated and sacrificing babies. And they'd have some white trash girl come out and go, I had babies for Satan and I killed all of them. And it's like, you know, the statute on murder doesn't go away.
Yeah.
So if you really have, you're going to be in jail, honey. and then there'd be all these people claiming, you know, they'd be sort of loosely associated with police departments. And what they did is they made a living being cult cops. Like, they'd consult with police departments. And they charge police departments like $125 a head for like a class of, you know, 75 police officers, where they'd buy like the Satanic Bible and like they'd go to the local occult store and buy like a fake skull and some shit like that. And they, well, we found this at a crime site. And they'd give all these lectures and just saying absolute bullshit, just sort of made up or pulled out of all different kind of, you know, old books about witchcraft and occultism. And they made a fortune, and then people bought into that. And the major evangelists, they kept promoting it. And those books are still, I mean, most of them are out of print at this point. But it was kind of crazy. And it wasn't until the FBI really got into it, and it was happening in Europe, too. And all the investigative agencies over there pooled their work with the folks here. And we in the Church of Satan consulted with these people. Anton LaVey did, I did. We were always working with the FBI and law enforcement people to say, no, this is what this really is. We'll help interpret symbols if there's crimes that are weird. We'll help point out what this is related to or that it's just bullshit, like, oh, that's a video game. You know, there's nothing real here. You know, because they don't know. Like, they come to these things and they see something weird and it's like, oh, no, that's Santeria or that's, you know, Palo Mayombe, you know, these other religions that aren't Christian or might be derived. They're Afro-Caribbean syncretist religions. They might be using symbols like that. Somebody's putting a curse on somebody. They, you know, pull a chicken head off or they've got, a cauldron full of bones and skulls that they've stolen from a graveyard, you know, in like Palo Mayombe. But everybody's like, it's Satanism. And it's like, no, it's not. And that same thing is happening right now with that M13 gang.
MS-13.
MS-13. Yeah. Like, because they're interested in the Santa Muerte cult, which is really something that's derived from Christianity. Christianity has saints, and throughout Central and South America, the idea of mixing local pagan gods with the Christian saints has been forever, since like the conquistador showed up, it actually started. So this sort of skeleton goddess, which the people who are her worshippers really believe she exists and can do wishes, you know, grant things, but she does it for like actually darker desires. So big with the drug dealers, and also big with like outsiders, like gay people and other folks that are marginalized, but they worship this skeleton goddess who looks like death. But of course, all the police who don't know about this at all, they're like, it's Satanism. And it's like, it isn't. you need to consult religious scholars to really understand unusual religions. And just because it's an unusual religion doesn't mean it's criminal. But with where this is concerned, there are criminal gangs using this as like a main symbol for what they're doing. So, you know, that's always the issue. Like, why we work with law enforcement is that to help them focus and not misinterpret things and be condemning people for something that they just don't even understand.
It goes back to fear.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Not under, you know.
And also that wanting to, that scapegoat, wanting to assign blame to something that's not in your control.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Like the West Memphis 3, those guys went to prison for 20 years or longer, actually, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what it really comes down to is some pedophile raped and killed a couple of kids, and they just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
They're the local weirdos. Yeah. We blame it on them.
Yeah. You know, and it's just, it's like that textbook. You interrogate somebody who doesn't understand what's going on. Eventually, they'll tell you what you want to hear.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the whole thing during the panic, because there were all these people claiming to be therapists who would do these kind of interrogations of kids, and they would mislead them. Yeah. They'd take out like dolls and say, okay, so what did he do to you when he touched you here? Not like, did he touch you or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was all completely leading testimony. And again, when they examined all of the tapes, you know, videos and audio tapes, it became very clear. And then so it evaporated. But it went on for years. And there was even a point where Congress was examining a bill to outlaw Satanism, make it illegal.
Yeah.
It was in the middle of when I'm doing a lot of talk shows, and it was just, you know, I've got to be out there.
Yeah.
You know, I did.
And it's just that is unconstitutional.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But the fear was so great that was proposed and seriously considered.
Yeah, and that's worked so well in the past when you ban religions. Yeah, works out so great. You have like plagues and stuff, you know. It's in the Bible. Didn't you read it?
How's the reception been in the Hudson Valley? Because, I mean, first and foremost, we like to concentrate on local stuff.
And one question that I did have before, but it didn't really work in the conversation, is do you like congregate?
Not specifically. See, we're a non-congregational religion. We're not about meetings because we're so individualist. Yeah. We don't expect members of the Church of Satan to even like each other. Because, again, people have so many different pursuits that we've done a few major conclaves. Like, we did one for the 50th anniversary here in Poughkeepsie. Mm-hmm. It was huge. And then when we did one the year before in Washington, D.C. as well. We sort of bracketed the whole 50th anniversary year by doing two major gatherings. And a lot of people came together. And a lot of people found out that they loved other people, and a lot of people found out they didn't love a lot of other people. So, and that's to be expected. And we always say that to folks. And people, when they join something, think, well, I want to get together with other, you know, local people who are like-minded. And we say, deal with each other on social media, you know, go to lunch or something, but you necessarily may not really like them. You might not really share anything beyond Satanism in common. And the whole point to us is that you have to have more than that in common to actually develop some kind of relationship with folks. So, yeah, no, we don't do meetings. But, you know, we're local and we're friends, like, here. Yeah. So we hang out. You know, we do, you know, dinners, barbecues. I do film screenings. Actually, we'll play music and teach people about it because my degrees are in music composition.
Yeah, yeah. And you have some of your old recordings have been remastered and everything. They're up on the website. You might take a listen. But going back, how's the reception been from the community here? Or has there been?
There hasn't been any problems. You know, what's funny is that like articles have popped out. And then you sort of look at the comments that come up, and some people are like, they've been here for a while. Like, you know, you're late to the party.
I feel like if you set up some sort of a brick and mortar place where people were meeting, then you're going to have that, you know, the whole NIMBY argument, you know, not in my backyard. But, you know, being that you're just a person that lives here that happens to be the leader of this,
it's
probably a little bit different.
Well, the fun thing is that there's, you know, like Bob's house, you know, my house is really like a beacon. It's like the biggest, it's a 4-story satanic monument. Like, it's not hiding anything. There's no in the closet here with that. And Bob's house is decorated in, you know, wonderful way. He's got like gargoyles and it's painted beautifully. And there's a naked Venus in the backyard that you can see. So it's again, we don't hide anything that we are, and people usually find it interesting. Like, our house is probably one of the most photographed houses in all of Poughkeepsie, which means don't come out on the porch in your underwear, because you never know who's going to be out there with a camera. But there is, you know, been very positive reaction to us. Like, people, when I painted the house and landscaped it and all of that, everybody came by and was like, wow, can you consult on my house colors too? Yeah, like there was no. I mean, once in a while somebody would be hostile, but the funny thing is, when I bought the house, the buildings department people sort of dragged me in a back room and surrounded me, and they were, "What do you intend to do with this house?"
That they're going to make some temple or
something? Well, I think they didn't even do any research enough to even do that, because the house had had bids on it by some of the local slumlords. Mm-hmm. And it had been a crack house and a place, you know, a rooming, illegal rooming house. So I think they kind of thought I might be another one. You know, I'm coming from New York City. You know, I'm one of those city slickers who's coming up here to take advantage of the Hicks and Poughkeepsie kind of thing. So I think they thought that I was just going to, you know, do the same thing that these other people were doing.
That's probably what it was. I got grilled from my house because I got grilled by my neighbors for this house.
Yeah.
So, I see you're doing a lot of work in there all the time. You guys planning on staying? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, I'm fucking stuck here for at least 5 years. So, but yeah I think you're just going to get grilled no matter what, especially if it was like, you know...
So they weren't really questioning you about your, you know, the Satanism part. Well, it was more about...
The thing is, I brought that up to them because I said, well, this is America. I can do what I want with my house. Although they did pass a law against being able to paint your house in that, if they could, they could call it one of historical interest and then they could tell you what you had to do.
Yeah.
And I had actually kind of prepared because I studied Victorian painting techniques and color palettes and all that. And I went and looked at all the historic houses and most of them are incorrect. So I was like, if you're going to give me any grief, I'm going to really come down with you about all these other ones.
Make them repaint everything.
Yeah. But I said, look, you know, it's this, my wife and I and our, you know, dog are going to live here, and the dog passed away and we now have two. But I said, that's it. We're going to be here for the long haul. We bought this house. We spent a lot of effort and money in restoring it. We're getting other people to move here. And so we are, you know, an active part of rehabbing Poughkeepsie, of making a commitment. And in addition, like, I'm actually pretty well known. And if you give me any kind of really stupid grief, I have access to media that you folks don't.
Yeah.
So... do think twice before you do anything foolish when dealing with me. So they were like, cool. And, you know, and some of them really liked what I did, and some people did freak out. But it's like, hey, it's America. It's my house. I can do what I want. And I've inspired other people. You can see that there's been other painted lady kind of things happening since I've done mine that are kind of more in unusual colors, like purples and bright colors and greens and oranges and things. So it's kind of nifty that... you know, by being bold with what I did, people say, well, if he did that, then we could do this. And I think that's kind of awesome that people are taking these old houses and fixing them up and really making them exciting again. Because what I always tell people is that I wanted to feel every time I walked up to my house excited, like, that's where I live. Isn't this awesome? And I want to feel that every single time.
Yeah.
And I always say, like, wouldn't you like to feel that way about your place? Like, you know, isn't it? And if it's just white or something, it's like, well, isn't that just the beginning? Like, there's a lot of colors out
there. My house is white, buddy.
Yeah, well,
I actually
doesn't have to stay that way.
I actually made new friends at my house when I was shooting photos for the book, The Satanic Warlock. I had two models who decided to go out on my back deck in their lingerie in the middle of the day. And the next day, I made three new friends on the block, guys who came up and said, well, how are you? What are you doing? What do you do for a living? Go mow your lawns.
How long have you been in the area?
It'll be 4 years in
October. 4 years? You enjoy it here as well?
I do, yeah. It's a great place to live. I mean, it's beautiful. And I, you know, I've lived in the city. My wife and I lived in the city for many years. And I moved out to L.A. in 2000 to work for Playboy. And then after that, moved to Vegas because I thought it would be a cool place to live for a while and maybe do a little semi-retired thing there. But it was quite boring. And I really did want to get more involved with the Church Central and to get closer to my friends up here. And it was a good thing because it's far enough away from the city where we don't have to be bothered, but close enough to go down if we really want to.
Right.
And it, you know, I look at myself now as a country gentleman, sort of. You know, so I don't know
how many people in Poughkeepsie think of themselves that way. I guess it is a big difference between living down there and up here. But
yeah, it's a huge difference.
Yeah, we've pretty much been locals forever. We grew up in, you know, your town of Poughkeepsie. I was Wappingers, so just south of here.
Same shit.
But yeah, we love this town, and I'm glad to see that there are people moving here and making it better.
Yeah. That's the key, because Poughkeepsie's been kind of a shithole for a long time, and I'm starting to see it. We're starting to see it finally turn a corner, and I'm just interested to see what happens in the future. And that's when we found out that you were here. I was like, oh, this is so cool. So something else, something more for this area, like that just gives more intrigue and more, you know, just
It enriches
culture.
It, you know? Yeah. We've been wanting that too. I mean, as we moved up here, like we lived in Hell's Kitchen in Manhattan. We could walk to like the best restaurants in no time, and we kind of got really used to that. And when we come up here, we're like, so what do we got up here? And it's like, okay, Main Street is developing. It's easy for us to walk there. And then we've got the Culinary Institute, which is like 7 minutes by car, which is kind of awesome. So we've got like...
The Crafted Cup on Raymond Avenue in Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, no, we've got all kinds of great stuff going on that's really bringing this area up. And some things fail, but then somebody else will step in and say, okay, what didn't work with that? And I think that's what we keep hoping, that things are going to step up. People are going to have like house pride and make their houses look cool. Because I've been taking pictures of a lot of houses around Poughkeepsie, because I'm probably going to do a little website about that, how people are renovating them and making them interesting.
Oh, wow.
So, that's the whole thing, is we definitely are in here for the long haul. Our friend Joe was in here from, much longer. And when he got his house, he used to have to screw gun the door shut when he left because the neighborhood was so bad. And he got Connie Corso, to have in his... back, his dog, because if people would break into his house, and he'd have to get them chased out, use a dog to do that, because like people didn't care, and he couldn't even get his mail. It was like in the zone where we are, which is like not far from Main Street, was one that the post office wouldn't even deliver mail to.
Wow.
So this is how much it's changed in these years. Like he kind of was the pioneer, and when we came up and saw his place, we were like, wow, this is an awesome house. And how did you do this? Because I mean, we were Manhattan dwellers in an apartment, for decades. So we're like, we kind of would like to do this too. And then we walked our dog and we saw this house down the street, and we're like, oh, that's the one. We really want that. So we got to that point where we're like, okay, this is something we could do. And with my wife retiring and savings and such that we had, we were like, all right, let's make it happen. We will buy the house and turn it into something that will be really something that will make us excited for the rest of our years here.
Mm. Yeah, this is our first home. It's just like it almost just now settling in. And I was like, holy shit, it's finally coming together. A lot of outside stuff to do, but that's neither here nor there. Community events, anything like that, do you guys throw, or, just kind of stay just...
Well, we participate in interesting things that are going on up here. Mm-hmm. It's like, that new farmer's market that's going on down by the riverfront is really nice. Mm-hmm. We like to shop down there. We like to patronize all the good businesses around here. Yeah. That's, I think, because we're about living well. We like to get good foods, and you go to Adams, you go to these other places, and you can. And Adams even did that great fence around my house, because they do all these kind of awesome things. So, yay, Adams, and trees. Like I landscape my property. Bob did too. Adams did the trees for us. So it's kind of, again, using who's local that's really good, and going to the local towns. I mean, you can go up to Rhinebeck or something, or Red Hook, and there's good things. And I since I'm a classical music guy, I like to hear good classical music, and the Bardavon
has absolutely.
Great. The Hudson Valley Philharmonic is wonderful, and I also go to Bard College and hear the orchestra now that plays there. It's like graduate students and then undergraduate students. They have two orchestras there. Beautiful concert hall designed by Frank Geary, who's one of the world's major architects. Great acoustics. So it's like I got like awesome classical music up here. One place I can walk to, like I used to walk to Carnegie Hall because I lived near there. And it's fantastic. So Poughkeepsie just has so much to offer. We're just really happy to be here and to be part of what's going on.
Well, happy you guys are here.
Thank you.
Very happy.
We appreciate it.
Add a little spice to the mix.
We appreciate it.
Real quick, I wanted to talk about Devil's Reign 3.
Mm-hmm.
You sent us a link that's going to be out. It's actually pre-order sales begin August 1st. And it's a art publication of... It's monsters influenced by mythology and...
Yeah. See, what I did is several years ago, I met Andy Howell, who's kind of an entrepreneur down at Fort Myers, because I have a summer place down. Well, actually, it's supposed to be more of a winter place, but we go down in the fall. Mm-hmm. I actually hadn't even known him. I've been going down there for years, my wife and I. And then a friend of ours, Thomas Thorne, who was the guy who did the Electric Hellfire Club band, He told me once, there's a Frank Frazetta show at this local place. And I'm like, oh, well, Frank Frazetta, awesome, right? So we went to see his art and met Andy, who runs the tattoo parlor and art gallery. And so he was like, I want to do something with you. Like, we got to do something together. And so this is the end of the 1 year, and then immediately in January, he's like, okay, we got to really get something going, because that's what he's his real kind of go-to guy. And so I said, well, why don't we do an art show that's based on the infernal names in the Satanic Bible, because they're from all these different cultures, and they could be illustrated really vividly. So we did. We did an art show called The Devil's Reign, and it's, you know, not like the movie The Devil's Reign that mm-hmm. Anton LaVey did, but it means the devil's rule, like plural and a ruling. So it was a success. We got all kinds of great people. A lot of famous tattoo artists participated, and the show traveled also up to Boston and got great press. So the next year we were like, okay, he's like, what are we going to do next? So I said, well, because Thomas Thorne introduced us and his band is sort of this sort of psychedelic satanic band, I said, we're going to do psychedelic blasphemy for the second one. And we're going to make this the summing up of the Electric Hellfire Club. So they did their final performances for this show. And we did a thing up in Tampa, and then we did one at the Gallery Space. And the Gallery Space now has a stage, and they have stuff going on every week there. It's like the place to be. And all the local culture publications in Fort Myers have, like, they put them up on a pedestal. It's like saying, Howell Gallery, the great place. If you want to go someplace cool, and just around the corner from them is the Bury Me Brewery, and they're this awesome place that makes micro brews. Bill Vaughn does; he's the brewmaster, and so for each of those two shows, he created a special beer. He would talk to me about the different kinds of beer that I enjoyed, and he's really perceptive and has a great, you know, discriminating sense of taste. So we did two awesome beers, and like labels have like sort of caricature art of me. So the third show is now going to be Daikaiju, which in Japanese means giant monsters.
Yeah, I wasn't about to try and pronounce that. I don't want to butcher it.
So, but we,
you haven't seen Pacific Rim?
Yeah, and the new one should, you know, it's in the works.
I kind of rolled my eyes for like 2 hours.
So
that movie.
Good. I love it.
I just watched it the other night again. Yeah. We're really in a renaissance of giant monster movies. Like, I've always been a Godzilla fan because Godzilla is a great symbol. Mm-hmm. You know, he means like the power of nature that responds to man's interference.
Yeah.
And that's a great symbol. And the thing is, with the movies more recently, you know, the Gareth Edwards Godzilla was very successful. And so Legendary now has their Monsterverse. So the one that they're filming right now is going to have, you know, King Ghidorah and Rodan and Mothra in it to be fighting with Godzilla. And already they're planning the one to follow that up is Godzilla versus King Kong. So they did Kong Skull Island to introduce their Kong, yeah, who's much bigger than most King Kongs. And Adam Wingard is going to direct that one, and Daugherty is doing this one. What they do is they give these younger directors a shot to have this like huge blockbuster movie. And it's really smart because they work their asses off to put everything that they can into it. It's not like somebody who's bored or their career, you're like, I'm doing a stupid monster movie. It's like, no, they get these guys who really give like absolutely all that they have. And it's very smart. And, you know, Toho in Japan was stimulated to step back up, because they hadn't done a Godzilla movie in forever. You know, they had given it to the Americans to do in 1998, and that sort of...
We just keep fucking it up.
Yeah, well, that one did. Cool design for a monster, but it didn't act like Godzilla.
Yeah.
But they stepped back in after the Gareth Edwards one was happening, because Edwards was going to do a sequel, but then he got invited to do a Star Wars movie. So he's like, well, how can I turn that down?
Yeah.
So they said, all right, well, when you're done with that, you can come back and do the Godzilla movie. And then when he was getting out of the Star Wars movie, he said, look, dudes, I'm burned out. Two giant blockbusters in a row. I need some time off. So then they said, okay, cool. We'll get somebody else to take this on. But the Japanese said, oh, well, this is too much of a gap between 2014 and 2018. Or no, it's 2019, I think, that the Godzilla movie is coming out. So they're like, we need to do something else. And they got the craziest guys in Japan who are super fans of giant monsters and the whole tokusatsu, you know, making the rubber suits and the miniatures. They've created a museum of that. Like, they're so into it. But they've also done other things, like the special effects guy Higuchi had done the Gamera trilogy in the 90s, which is really kind of awesome. Gamera's always like this dopey turtle and done for kids. But the 90s movies are serious and really awesome.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen them, like, and you like giant monsters, go see the 90s Gamera movies directed by Kaneko. And Hideki Anno, who did the Evangelion animes, which are really psychotic and bizarre, he wrote and directed this new film, and he got to just do crazy shit with it. They were like, do something different. And he's like, really? Like, how different? You know, and he sort of came up with this wild idea of a Godzilla that's in three different forms. Actually, ultimately has like five forms, and it totally doesn't look like Godzilla. It's a new creature. It's a totally new mythology for it. It's ugly and creepy. And for the first time, they did it all with CGI. Like, Toho braved it. They made a puppet that they were going to use, and they had done some stuff like that for the live-action, what are they called, movies? The ones with the giants eating people. I can't think of it right now. But
Attack on Titan.
Yeah, Attack on Titan. Because the guy who did the special effects for the Godzilla movie, he directed both those live action films, and they used some puppetry for that was enhanced with CGI.
I never saw the live action Attack on Titan.
It's pretty creepy. It's,
yeah,
the second season of the anime is available, mm-hmm. I think now.
Yeah, I watched the whole first season. I didn't know the second one's available. I always wanted to see the movie, but it's not really readily available.
Yeah, there are two of them, and you know, like a first and second part. But it's awesomely creepy. But when they started, actually, they tried to do some puppetry stuff for the new Godzilla film, and it really wasn't working. So they just said, "All right, we'll do motion capture like they do for did for Jackson's King Kong and they do for the Planet of the Apes movies to get like the sense of how Godzilla would move." And everything was animated, and it was they did some miniature work, but not a huge amount. But it's awesome. Like Toho really stepped it up. It looks, you could watch it against like other major movies, and it's not embarrassing. It doesn't look cheesy. You know, there's a couple of things that are like, "Oh, it looks a little like video gamey here and there." Because they don't have the budgets that American movies do. But it was like, wow, pretty impressive and cool. And so they're contractually obligated not to do another live-action movie until Legendary is done with theirs, their next two. But they said, okay, but nobody can stop us from doing an anime. So for the very first time, we're going to have Godzilla anime called Monster Planet that takes place, you know, thousands of years in the future. Like, mankind has been driven off Earth and is coming back and has made friends with other aliens. And Godzilla has dominated Earth, and his genetics have permeated all the animal life. So Earth is now the monster planet that's dominated by Godzilla and all of his, related species.
So now it's Starship Troopers.
You're pretty much, it's kind of in that direction, yeah. So, and there's another Starship Troopers coming out, too.
Is there really?
Yeah.
I heard.
Jesus, they're just rebooting the hell out of everything.
No, I don't think it's a reboot.
No, it's a sequel.
I don't think it's a sequel. I think it's probably like the fifth one.
Yeah. I've got all
of
them.
We watched the sequel at Rehoboth.
Oh, yeah. It was great.
Yeah, the first one is still the best in that.
Yeah, but I heard the guy who played Rico's signed on to
Casper Van Dien. He's voicing it.
Yeah, Casper Van Dien.
Christ.
Yeah, it's gonna be like a CG movie, right?
Well, there already is one.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, so that came out a couple of years ago, and then so this will be like that.
Oh, no, I did. Yeah, I did see that, because the one of the girls had like a Barrett sniper rifle. Yeah.
Where does all this monster talk rate on the scale for the Satanic Man?
what kind of chicks
can I get with monster talk?
Get me off planet nerd.
I saw you over there. I was like,
Tony finally said something funny, but I'm not going to read it. Just so you know.
Oh, shit. Well, where are we here? Yeah, we're closing in on the 2-hour mark, so yeah. I think it's...
If we want to wind it down.
Yeah, I would say so. I don't know. I appreciate you guys coming on. This is lightning, man.
Once you hit the 2 hours, people are like, okay.
To be honest, I was kind of shitting my pants about this whole thing. Just because, we're just starting to get some motion here.
Yeah, you have 10,000 more likes than we do on Facebook.
You guys, you're serious and... intelligent and well-spoken and scares the shit out of me.
Yeah, I guarantee you used about 10 words that he didn't know what they were.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I'm just going to go past that. Pick it up later.
You made new friends.
Yeah. Well, we had a great time.
So did
and
we.
Us too. Riveting stuff.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Cool.
Hit the outro for me so I can do the whole shit proper. Hey, you're not prepared,
Hold
are
on
you?
Hold on one sec. No, I had my computer muted.
Son of a bitch. I thought we were being we're fucking dick.
Yeah, well, we had to be professional for the most part. So, what do you want, Joiner?
Ender.
Not that one?
Outro.
I don't have that one.
Oh, you don't. All right, well, do that. That'll be fine.
Well, here, this one might be better.
That'll work.
One's better.
So it's Peter H. Gilmore, Dr. Robert Johnson, Magus. We didn't talk about that title, really.
Well, Anton LaVey was the first one, and I'm the second one in the organization.
Where's the title come from? What's the actual...
It's older hierarchical things that they've used in sort of occult fraternities, so it's just developed from that.
Okay. And Magister, how's that... what does that tie into as, like...
It's like a.
That's the fourth degree. I'm the fifth degree.
Right. Oh, right.
It's
oh,
up. Geez. It's up there. It's good.
One more degree and you get Super Saiyan, right?
Yeah.
Is that how that works?
Yeah.
Sorry, I couldn't help
but
it.
But there's only one Magus. Only one.
Well, it's the Church of Satan, churchofsatan.com to find, and you have all your literatures right there to take a look at. You know, don't judge. Just go in and read. And. You
and
know.
Learn.
Yeah, learn.
Ignorance is curable.
I just realized I do have the outro.
That's the big thing. It's just, you know, have the courage to learn. And, yeah, of course, Old Nick Magazine.
Thank you.
.com. And, oh, what's this one? Ooh, that's a great card. You're a fancy motherfucker.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, oldnickmagazine.com. Check them out, too, as well. You also have... also look up the Satanic Warlock by Dr. Robert Johnson, and also the Satanic Scriptures by Peter H. Gilmore. And you also... The Devil's Reign 3, Daikaiju?
Yes, got it.
Yes. Pre-order sales begin August 1st. It's our publication of Big-Ass Monsters.
Yep. And if you like weird electronic music, my...
yes,
we never got to any of that.
Yeah, my Symphony is available. There's plenty of my stuff that you can download on churchofsatan.com. There's a music source page for my stuff. But that album is now available, and it's sort of very strange electronic music. And you could actually listen to the whole thing. We have a link there. We did a Liquid Light show to premiere it. That had like digital stuff and really the old-fashioned liquid light that you project and you move a thing around.
Oh,
so we
cool.
combined those techniques and played the whole album. So we have a link to that so people can listen to the whole thing.
Very cool.
Some old-school synth stuff.
Yep. Yeah, I did that when I was a kid. So
fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on, guys. I really appreciate it. It was enlightening, to say the least.
Thanks for having us. It's been fun.
Yeah. It's been a great time. Thank
Next
you.
Week, anybody?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. The answer is yes. I just don't remember who.
All right. Well, we'll figure that out. Join us next week for someone.
Yeah, I'll be promoting. I believe it's a band.
Well, anyway.
If you want to wait a sec, I can tell you.
I don't really want to wait.
You don't want to? You don't want to wait a sec?
I think we're...
Now I'm trying to take longer just to be a jerk. Hudson's Crew. They are a band.
Ah, all right.
Yeah.
Hudson's
so,
Crew.
Google it if you want some information on them, because I don't have it in front of me.
All right, guys. Again, thank you so
thank
much.
You.
We'll
you,
see you guys too. Next week. Thanks for listening.
And hail Satan.
Yeah, hail Satan. So happy I got to say that.